Riese und Müller Unplugged. The podcast for everything that gets us in motion.
Hello and welcome to a new episode in our podcast Riese und Müller Unplugged. My name is Julia Jankowski and on this channel we are talking to people working for and working with Riese and Müller in their way of working. So we will disclose some back-end stories of Riese and Müller, and not only about employees working directly for the company, but also people within the social, let's call it bubble and environment of Riese and Müller. And today I'm talking to Raphael Gilgen. Raphael is a trans scout, so he's working for the brand Vitra. So if you're not familiar with the brand Vitra, it's a design-driven company for living and working solutions. You might have come across some furniture made by Vitra, some products, some solutions. But anyway, I think Raphael can introduce himself the best way. So hello, Raphael. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi. Hello. Hello, Jule.
How are you doing this morning? How did you get started today?
Oh, so like I'm in a second lockdown, quite a while, and video kills a travel star. Yeah, I spend a lot of time in front of my machine, talking, listening, training. Oh my God, It is an endless story.
Endless story, constantly talking to machines and not to people. So, you work as a trans scout. Some of our listeners might ask themselves, what the hell is a trans scout? Or rather, how does he explore, evaluate relevant vibes and issues? Can you describe the way of working, of your way of working?
I have a super short example. Look, maybe whatever you do from the audience and what your profession is, so you are a fantastic and great pilot. And also, I'm surrounded by great pilots in the Vitra organization or our customers and partners. And my job is to provide these pilots with the best weather map they can get. So to find the right direction in an age of uncertainty. So my job is to help ourselves and even customers to make a jump into another time, into the future. Up to 5 or 10 years from now. You can call it zoom out because most of the companies are zoom in. Zoom in means you're checking your quarterly results, you're looking that you achieve your goals. And zoom out means a 5 or 10 or longer term perspective. And that's my job.
So you're kind of helping people to navigate a direction to the future, is it?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And to give them also alternatives. It's not like that there is one direction. It's like to give them a good, I would say, head-up display with the information which is necessary, embedded into a context or like a narrative, into a story. And out of these, they know how to deal with the change.
And talking directly about the way how you proceed, how do you find out what is really relevant? I mean, you cannot really research from your desk, maybe part of it, but how do you proceed at the moment? I mean, yeah, you need to travel.
So the lucky thing is that I've done that 6 years intensively. So I travel a lot in these 6 years, 5 continents, more than 35 countries. So an average 20 countries a year. So you go like often to Japan or Singapore, Asia or to the US, and for sure into Europe. And but to give you an idea how to make that happen or how the new is coming into the world. So we all are now focused or faced with remote work. Remote work means this giant universe with remote work tools, which helps us to co-create, to collaborate, to chat, to document, to predict things with any tools. It could be software or apps. But there is, and in this remote universe, there's the mixed reality, the technology about augmented virtual reality. And that just for an idea. So currently I check this technology, how good this technology could be, and if there is a chance that maybe in 5 years from now, 30% of the knowledge workers spend half of the day in the virtual space, in a digital twin of the company, maybe with an Oculus headset. And then they enjoy much more immersive virtual experience. That is just one example. Or another example is, if you talk about mobility, you have to talk about cities. If you talk about cities, you have to think about the climate change and planet-centric design. So even planet-centric design is current on my observations, how we can bring the awareness about a foot and a handprint into organizations that every company take care about the climate change agenda.
Mm. So there's a direct connection between all these three aspects you described right now.
Always, yeah. Mm,
there's always, if there's a change within the future of work or the way we're working, so there will be definitely a change of how we design mobility, how we design workspaces, and so on. But going back to the point, when you find out something really substantial, I mean, do you evaluate, do you discuss it, do you like explore it with a network, or how do you come to a point where you say, so this will be like a super trend, or this will be maybe like a short hype or whatever? I mean, you have to make like a best guess, or how do you proceed in this manner?
To give you an example, recently I read a study from the World Economic Forum. And there was the idea that hopefully the 2020 agenda is this agenda that stands for that every company has additional to the commercial perspective of a company, a cultural or sustainable perspective. And that the book of the 2020 ends up that this is the time where we achieve the turnaround in this climate change fight. So, and I leave then a quote with this article or the study on my LinkedIn profile. And I got in more than, in less than, I think, 3 days, 40,000 views. Okay, if you get 40,000 views in this short period, you see, oh my God, it seems this topic is really interesting. This approach is interesting for the community. So this gives you an idea about direction. Maybe you leave something on LinkedIn, you get no feedback. It's like maybe boring stuff. In the past, I implement always new findings in my talks and in my lectures. And then if you look into the eyes of the audience, you immediately know this topic is really hot, or this topic is like, it's something boring, yeah, or a mislink. And so there are several approaches to find out if you're on the wrong or if you're on a good way.
If you're in a good way. And has it ever come across your work that you were really completely misled, so that you really thought this might be a big, big hype or big new trend, and it was just a... yeah, not really relevant.
Yeah, there was one. Yeah, there was one. It was a platform. It's called Contour. Contour was the idea for a multi founder in the US to organize the entire B2B business, but B2B design furniture. So, like VS Vitra for sure would be involved. And I thought in the beginning, I visited the team in New York and I thought, oh, that's not good. This platform has the potential to be a really big and large platform. Yeah, and that was, no, I think after a while, less than 1 year, the platform doesn't exist anymore. And the other thing, I also thought that I highly believe in the idea of co-working, but at the end, what I underestimated was the power of the smaller co-working organizations, like these boutique co-worker, like in Berlin, Ansgar Oberholz with his entire co-working spaces. Yeah, I thought at the end there will be only three or four giants, and now we see it is the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, there's a distinction between talking business-wise and talking like maybe the mindset of co-working. So I'm not really sure if it's all successful in a business perspective, but at least it is like changing a mindset of how we work together. And so the small, what you call them, the boutique co-working are really, they leave a big impact, I think, of the way we work, even in corporates together. And how do you... I mean, how can people learn from one branch to another? For example, you find a new pattern of behavior, a new pattern of working together. And how can that be transmitted to other branches? Or how is there any kind of interaction? How do you see the interconnections between branches?
By the way, that is the future. the future in science is cross innovation. If we don't think so high sophisticated in cross in science, if we go a little deeper, a little level lower, people, the strongest. So how you can learn today best is in the agenda of social learning, means you learn from other people, and hopefully not from these people inside your organization, your company, and maybe they have the same job. For example, maybe you work in a giant architecture or medium architecture studio in Stockholm, and you should spend the most of the time not by reading architecture magazines or talking to architects. You should spend a critical mass of your time to talking to people outside your industry and outside your business. There is a book from Alex Pentland called Social Physics. And in this book, he describes this kind of momentum, how important it is to have a daily kind of exploration.
So there needs to be a network of interdisciplined workers. Otherwise, there's no innovation.
Yeah, in your words. And by the way, we talk in these days about reinventing the cities. One point, all these public spaces are the ideal spaces for social learning and for exploration. Because here several communities and teams come together and share their experience.
So interdisciplinary work is the key solution.
It is.
I interpreted it right, what you're saying. Talking design. In Germany, we tend to interpret the word design more in an aesthetic or aesthetic way and more like creating things that look nicely and not really in a way that we talk about designing corporates, designing societies. That's in an international perspective, completely different. But talking more in maybe like an English or American way of what they connect to the word design, what do you think will the future way of working look like? How do we design our future way of working in terms of collaboration, in terms of maybe leadership and workspaces?
So first, we should be open to start this idea, to think about this question with a white paper. So it's like to start by zero. I'll let you know why. We, in the past, there was one space that was the office, and you have to commute every day to this space. So, and work was hardwired to a physical space called maybe the headquarters or the central building, however. In the future, we have two major spaces. One space is a physical space, and there's not only one. That is an ecosystem. Start with your house, your home, with a coworker, a bar, restaurant, and the headquarters. So on one hand side, you have this opportunity to work from anywhere out of a physical perspective. But there's also the virtual perspective to work remote, sitting in front today of your PC. In the near future, maybe with augmented and virtual reality, and in a, I would say, less than 10 years perspective with kind of holodecks. And these two spaces requires a different approach how to lead people. Leadership is always is based on knowledge and on experience. But the new momentum is how to lead remote. The other thing is, the way how we work together was trained by physical interactions. Now we have to learn how to work together, how we work together, also in the virtual world. And then you immediately you get during the lockdowns where people can't go back to the office and they have to organize themselves wherever they are, they find new tools. And just to give you an idea, there are a lot of tools. There are synchronous work tools. So you and your team, you can work together whenever you want on the same task. If it is a paper, a report, if it is a digital twin of a machine, or you design a bike, whatever it is. And in the physical world, you can't do that. The most portion of the physical world was asynchrone. It was like ping pong. Yeah. And here you could see, here you can see, oh my God, that's totally new. And that it is. So, and now we have to find out. It's like we are now part of a giant experiment. And it takes, I would say, another maybe 18 months from now. And in these 18 months from now, companies come up with good ideas where you say, hey, that is a good idea how to deal how we work. That is a good idea how to deal with leadership. That is a good idea how to design space at home and in the office. That is a good idea how to implement a digital twin of a space into our organization. So there's currently, I would not say there's an answer. I have my flipboard in the internet. It's my digital archive with more than around 3,000 articles. And I find weekly new ideas there.
Mm-hmm. So do you think we will find more office at home? For that's for sure. And even more home at office?
Look,
will they look more homely?
Sure. That will for sure happen. You are not willing to go. You're not willing to commute an hour or 45 minutes to spend the rest of the day on a gray desk in your office on a swivel chair. That makes not sense. You can do a portion of that work maybe at home. There was a great article in the New Yorker 2 weeks ago, and it was like, what is the office for? The office is for, in a nutshell, for everything. But not for work, because you can do work from anywhere. And that brings it to the point. We have to reinvent the use cases of the office.
So that's an interesting point. Do you see any differences in an international comparison between Germany, or are there any like leading markets really ahead of time, or there are not really substantial differences between the cultures?
Look, in my approach, in the zoom out approach, where you don't go so deep in details, I would say no. I would say how we work is universal. It is a universal language. And look, think about smartphones. Wherever you go in the world, there are smartphones and people using their smartphones. And for sure, they're using them different. And the smartphones in Africa, they're different, like my smartphone here at home, or like the Fairphone of my wife. But at the end of the day, we use the same technology with the same habits. So on that perspective, it is universal. The only change is looking into the future. Understanding the context means always you think about culture, society, business, and technology. And what makes a difference is for sure culture. And culture sometimes has an impact by religion. And that is another difference again. So that makes a difference. But at the end of the day, how companies succeed and the front runners, they are all on the same page.
Mm. But do you find there are some cultures which are extremely open to change? Or is it too more like a cliche? So it's more connected to the age of the people than
to the average age of the society. Look, if you go to Southeast Asia, where the most of these communities get the first time the chance to be part of the race. And I think the average age is there 26, 28, something like that. There is, these societies are different, like Central Europe, where the average age is 46 or 48. Yeah. So that makes for sure a difference. The other point is, one of my examples is always Boston. When I had my second tour to Boston, I was guided by a former dean of the MIT. And we are standing on the crossroad, and then he told me, Rafa, I think this year is the smartest crossroad in the world. And I asked him, why? And then he turned around 360 and he let me know, this lab, Nobel Prize. And if we go together there for lunch or in the afternoon or in the evening for a beer, if you go out of the bar or the restaurant, you are smarter. You learn a lot. And that means you need a density of people. You need this kind of creative force, the center of gravity of creativity. And that makes a difference. And here the best example is to go to Shenzhen. Shenzhen, the Pearl River Delta with Shenzhen, Guangzhou, Hong Kong. I had there my first learning journey in 2018. And honestly, after 3 days, I was there with a group of 10, something like that. And after 3 days, we were sitting on a rooftop on a bar for beer in the evening, and we understand nothing. We didn't get with our mindset, we didn't get the access to this kind of ecosystem. We totally misunderstand that. And then at the day four, it was a Thursday, we met David Lee. He's one of these leaders and thought leaders of the DIY community in China. And he get always visits from CEOs. I think the most of the Fortune 500 companies visit David Lee. And he explained us then this kind of ecosystem, how it works with the supply chains, the designers, the speed factories, the assembling companies and whatever. And then you see, wow, that's totally different. So they need a kind of critical mass in a large scale of people who are different and who work on the same idea.
So when you talk about density of meeting people and getting together, how do you balance personally your density of impact and input? Do you live in a space like Berlin, for example? Or
no, I live in the outback. That's quite easy. So during my travels, when I come back from Asia, you land in Munich in the morning, so maybe at 5 or 6 o'clock. So then I go into my car and then I drive to Munich. It's 135 kilometers close to Regensburg, World Heritage City. And there we live in the outback on a mountain, on a farm, little farm. And I would say 2 hours later, I was cleaning up the stable, or I go to cut the trees or to do some work on the farm, and immediately you are grounded. It's like always a friend of mine say always in the morning, in the night, Shibuya, in the morning, Arnulfplatz. Arnulfplatz is a little place in Regensburg. And that it is. And yes, sometimes it's like you overheat it. It's like you totally freak out with this experience. But that helps you to understand the world.
So you really need like a balance, not to freak out by all this input you get. You need both. Okay. So talking mobility, let's switch to one of our topics we want to discuss today. is there is a complete and direct and close connection, we talked about that beforehand, is between the future of work, the way we create space, and mobility. What is your idea on this topic? Is how do you see the interconnection, for example? What will really change in mobility in terms of commuting and traveling around?
If we zoom out 10 years from now, I would say in 10 years from now, and it's maybe important to start with a 10 years from now story, velocopters are normal in the major city areas or in these mega cities. These velocopters, and so that means we have a totally new kind of transportation. We will get autonomous e-pellets, like small pods. They're using the existing infrastructure. And I also believe that the velocopters are using most of the existing infrastructure, like old car stories, maybe to land there and to lift up there. I believe that the private transportation by cars, the individual transport, this in these major cities will reduce to a minimum. And in the same portion, ideas for the first mile, if there are hoverboards, bicycles to share, other devices, they will increase dramatically. And there will be a few cities that are really ahead with an increase of public transportation, but a smart one. So that means your waiting time for your next bus or whatever it is less than 2 minutes. And so that makes then no sense anymore to grab a cab or to sit down in your own car. But how to achieve that? That has to start now, that we as commuters make our own experiences, because the experience is as strong as memory and brings us, how to say, not the evidence that it works. I believe bicycles in general, they will increase. E-bikes, they will dramatically increase. And cities will give the right answer now by opening much more bike lanes. Also in cities where, and especially the German cities, there you can't think them currently without car. Yeah. Another challenge will be in the hand of public transportation, because they are so regulated and they have so many different stakeholders with different, perspectives, that is really difficult. And what will be the breakthrough? The breakthrough will be a kind like Amazon Web Services, a kind of technology which helps us to operate transportation as best and as convenient as it goes. Maybe there is, you are part of one platform. With this platform, you can take a hoverboard, a bicycle, then you take seamless an autonomous pod, maybe then for a larger distance, a velocopter. But this is a kind of a seamless journey. You get, it is a fair and transparent pay system. And you also get information about your carbon foot and handprint.
Mm-hmm. So zooming in, can e-bikes be like a low entry or easy entry in a way of more multimodal transportation? I mean, switching.
E-bikes are a core of the entire ecosystem. Mm. As a personal e-mobility, by the way, on the scale of a bike, or there are also companies, they bring now these trikes or four-wheel bikes into this race. I think there are really important parts of this ecosystem.
And if you look on e-bike as a core element, do you see it more like sharing or concept, or do you think it's about both. Owning or both?
Yeah, no, it is both. You know, it is both. Think, let us, and now you see how to say difficult it is to understand all the context. We, as the Germans, Germany is a bad example because we will not grow so much in the next years, growth population-wise. But there are other areas in the world that grow like hell. For that reason, cities are becoming denser. There's no space for the people have no, like me, my little Ponyhof, where I could store three, or maybe I could store 100 bikes if I want. But they can't do that. And that is a reason why to share things, yeah? So it is not, the question is, if you own it or if you share it, it is your living, it is your living model, where you live and how you deal with that. Yeah. And for that, if you live maybe in Berlin or like in Munich, in the city center, the most of the people there, like my brother have several platforms where he take a car or a bike or whatever he take to go from A to B, yeah, or a scooter.
Yeah, we definitely have to leave our own like mental bubble.
Sure.
Yeah, to think about the future. And in terms of infrastructure, what will you see? What will rise? Yeah, looking at the horizon, in the connection of e-bikes, it's not only about bike lanes. What else can we see, or what do you guess will we see in terms of infrastructure for e-bike solution?
Yeah, you. I don't know if you follow coincidence the Berliner Tagesanzeiger last week, and a friend of mine, Malte Jäger, was part of a group. They take out, I think, 4 tons of bicycles last weekend, or like from Thursday to, I don't know, weekend, out of the Spree, out of the river Spree.
Wow.
Come on. I have seen the pictures. And I saw
4 tons.
And he was, and Malte, so we text then on Instagram, and he was quite shocked because he didn't believe that, but he was part of this group. So where they go with a ship and with a crane and with a strong magnet. And this ship was packed with bikes. They throw them in the river Spree. So, and here you see there was maybe a blind spot in the idea of bike sharing in the first
definitely.
Phase. And out of that, you could learn. Sharing means caring, taking over responsibility. And if you share something, but the people who enjoy sharing don't understand why to share is important, that is the wrong way. Sharing means also to educate societies why we do that. And that it's not enough to build a platform, to have an app and things like that. But I hope that societies learn a lot in the past, that these things would not happen again. So on one hand side, it's like me as a part of the community who would share a kind of like bikes, I have also a kind of responsibility. And you have to make it transparent. Maybe that you get kudos when you're really good, when you do things, or maybe you get like negative points, however, yeah.
So like implement social aspects and aspects
sure,
of sure. responsibility. And this is one of the main arguments against sharing economy, which people always bring into the discussion and say, we're not ready for share. And this is like, I don't know, people might change very quickly.
But you have to start. You have to start. Look, if you think now about these bicycles in the River Spree, that's bad. But I think that also happens if you start a movement.
Yeah, that's just the beginning. We're talking about the city environment. What about rural areas? I mean, more in the countryside. What will change within the personal transport system in rural areas? What do you think? Which role can e-bikes play more in the countryside? Or do you think they will play a minor role?
No. But that depends on how rural. Look, if you think about the suburbs are easy. Yeah, I think they are not difficult. But if you think about rural areas, I would say there's a limitation of 40. I would say it's a time or a distance limitation. There is a point, maybe half an hour, to go half an hour with a bike driving into the city or wherever you drive then from this rural area. I would say 45, maybe that is okay. But after that, that's sport. Yeah. And sport is different to commuting. Yeah.
And it's not really supporting the idea of being convenient for most of the people, maybe. So that's like a different intention when you want to do sports.
Yeah. I saw it when I go with my car, maybe to the airport or somewhere, the same people in the morning on 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock with their race bikes going to Regensburg. Yeah. So that was like kind of their daily exercise. Maybe they were out.
Part of their training.
Yeah, triathletes or race. Yeah, they use it as part of a training. Yeah. But this is, I would say, the minimum portion of the commuters.
Mm. It's not the average commuting pattern what you will find. Well, thank you so much, Raphael, for just giving a deep insight and what you find out is might be mega trends, how you proceed in your daily work. And it was really interesting to listen to you. And my last question to you is, what are your personal future plans in terms of mobility? For you personally speaking.
I will get in 2 weeks my new hardtail bike. So I fall in love again with the old style to go mountain biking, and so I bought me a hardtail. After a while thinking buying a super high-tech carbon full suspension, I make the opposite. So I'm looking forward to this bike because and I will when I travel again, or I will carry this bike with my car, because I want to endeavor more this year also the cities where I am with my bike. And with this kind of bike, also price wise, there's no risk that someone steals then my bike, I don't know, in another city, because it looks so fancy. First. Second, I have to rethink how to deal with my car, but I still drive 4,000 up to 5,000 kilometers a month. That's a lot. But there is no alternative because I live here. Going to the train station, it's 30 minutes by car. Then you have to go and then take the train. But here is there's a really bad high-speed connection going to the north of Germany, or even going to the west, there's no chance. Yeah, that is an issue we're really thinking about, but I'm optimistic that maybe in 2 or 3 years, there are alternative technologies, there are another battery systems, other charging infrastructure, that maybe this car is the last of my consumption cars. Mm.
So at the moment it's a challenge, but there might come up. We might come up with some solution that might be convenient and innovative.
I highly believe that, because now the pressure is on the markets, and especially the next generation. 46% of the under 26 year old generations in the European Union take care about nature and animals much more than in the past. Kids are much more critical to their parents in the feedbacks, not annoying in a good sense. And for that reason, I believe there is a big change. There's a cool word in German. It's called Enkelfake, Enkelfennig solution. And there is, I think it's part of the Haniel company. They bring the word Enkelfake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really love this kind of approach.
Yeah. It's a very smart perspective, not to think about the next, even the one after the next generation. Yeah. Okay, Rafa, thank you so much for the opportunity talking to you. That was really, really a deep dive into the future. I feel like going back to Outback to have like a balance between input and relaxation. So thank you very much and have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Riese und Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion. If you want to hear more, be sure to listen to our other episodes.